So I have a screenshot here of an email that was sent to me. As you can see, the date is from last year, May of last year. This is a date where I reached out to Shaquille O'Neal, you know, the Hall of Fame basketball player, that I always admired. His Orlando Magic poster still hangs on my childhood bed, to be exact, for when I was growing up. So he was my favorite athlete, and he went off to the NBA, made hundreds of millions of dollars, and done pretty well in the investing world with buying numerous Taco Bells and investing in Google early, all type of great stuff. So I was wanted to reach out to him, to his people, to see if he would come on the show, but he declined. And you can see here in the email, the message that I got back saying that, hey, that he declined to come onto the show, or his team declined to come onto the show, which is fine. But I did find an interview that he did, I think it was with Wall Street Journal or something like that, where he was speaking on investing. I thought it was just some great gems that he put out on how he invested or whatnot. Now, granted, he is in a position that most people are not, you know, being 7 foot tall and having a talent that only less than 1% of us have to go off and make hundreds of millions of dollars. But he did a great job in being able to invest his money and turn into an entrepreneur, businessman, news commentator, all that great stuff. So he said some very keen things on how he was an early investor into a lot of the things that we use today, like the Ring app, Google, all of the good stuff. So I wanted to share this with you guys.
I want to be something more than Shaq. See, the Shaq guy is going to fade away because you got Steph Curry and all these guys stepping up. The Shaq guy will fade away at some point in time, but Dr. Shaquille O'Neal will be around forever and ever and ever.
Dr. Shaquille Rashawn O'Neal, welcome to you.
How are you, sir?
Good, and I call you doctor because unbeknownst to a lot of people, you hold a PhD in education.
Yes, that's true.
Tell me about the franchises that you're involved in.
My favorite one right now is Krispy Kreme. I've had relationships with 24 Hour Fitness, Five Guys, and, you know, but my favorite one right now is Krispy Kreme.
And why is that?
Because I like donuts, and Charles Barkley loves donuts, and he's my biggest customer. No, but Krispy Kreme is just a fabulous donut. I was introduced to it in college and been in love with it ever since. So right now I've got a few franchises looking to get more. And I want to be a large part of that business.
So I was reading about your relationship with Carnival, and they called you the CFO. It was confusing because usually that's chief financial officer, but for you it's a different title. What is it?
It's the chief fun officer. Have you not heard?
No. About what?
CFO.
Oh, really?
Want to know what else? Tag, you're it. Oh. Run! It's my job to bring awareness to the people about how fun Carnival Cruise Line is. I admit, I used to be a hypocrite about it. I lived across the street from the terminal. And all I saw driving by was a big ship with a bunch of windows. So I assumed it's for old people, it's boring, there's nothing to do. But I was riding around one day and I said, let me go check out one of these ships. That was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. Restaurants, activities for the kids, full court basketball court, swimming pool, nightclub. Like I was amazed. So I had a meeting with Mickey and Carnival. I said, hey, I don't think the people know what you rolling with over here. Let me be the one to tell them. Because again, when you, like back in the day, if you say cruise to me, I'm thinking, bro, I'm not, no, that's for old people. I'm not doing that, but it ain't for old people. It's for everybody, and it's affordable. And I stayed at a lot of luxury plush hotels in Vegas. It's the same thing. I'm talking about the rooms, the decor, everything. It's amazing.
What was your first investment?
My first big investment? I want to say it was Google. I mean, I had a lot of little minor investments that, you know, people would come and say, hey, we're going to do some pinstripe jackets with the King of England crest. People are going to like it. You give me $100,000, I'll give you $1 million in a year. I did a lot of stuff like that never worked out. So one day I'm sitting playing at the Beverly Hills Hotel and I hear these two gentlemen talking about Google search engines and one day your phone's going to be this and you type anything and it comes up and I was like, Say that again. Oh, hey, how you doing, Shaq? Come over here, listen to this. Boom, 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 boom. If I would like to invest in this. My guy hooked it up and we invested, and then I forgot all about it. And then I read the article, and everybody else read the article about the big hit that some of the early investors received. When you look at the perfect pictures, it looks like I'm at home saying, do this, do that, do that. It ain't. It's just, you know, being in the right place and time and just, you know, and just opportunities coming.
So, but you still have to have a skill for being able to weigh those opportunities. How do you know who to trust?
My skill is, if something comes across my desk and I don't believe in it, I won't even look at it at all.
So it's like, just a gut feeling.
No, it's just one, I can't lie to the people, right? And two, yes, a gut feeling. Like my favorite story, and I don't want to disrespect anybody, but after my first championship, Wheaties, my people say, hey man, why don't you be on the cover of Wheaties? I said, I can't do that. They said, what do you mean, brother? Breakfast champions? I said, don't know what it tastes like. Never gonna taste it. What do you mean? I said, well, Frosted Flakes will always be my first option if you want to talk cereal business with me. Then Fruit Loops, then Fruity Pebbles, period. There ain't nothing to talk about. When I do business, it's never about the monetary aspect. It's about changing people's lives, letting people, you know, understand that, you know, you can still have fun. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like, hey, you don't know what's on this ship. I do. Let me show you. Let me tell you. And by the way, not expensive. I know I just told you we got 50, 60 options, but guess what? This is the price. Bam. So that's what I'm doing. Now, along the way, you see an opportunity. You go back and have a conversation with them and say, you got a lot of great restaurants on here. However, people like chicken. I don't see you have a chicken spot. This is what I'm doing. Would you like to be involved? See, I never throw it. You always got to have, you know, business conversation with them. So I'm launching my first big chicken in 2020 on the ship Radiance. That's going to be our first one. But again, like whenever I do business, it's not about the money. I heard Jeff Bezos say one time when he was talking, he said he makes his investment based on if it's going to change people's lives. And once I started doing that strategy, I think I probably quadruple what I'm worth now.
Let's talk about the future. You've had a lot of success in the business world. You've done movies, you've rapped, you've done all kinds of things. But what's most important to you now?
I have a lot of dreams and aspirations. First one is to be sheriff somewhere. That's my next big dream. Second one is law school. Third one is to open up children's schools, K-4. There's a school around the corner from my house. I love it. I call it the No Problem School. All the stuff we got going on, and I live in deep South Georgia, well not South, but south of Atlanta. And all the stuff we got going on, I ride by the school every day. Black and white kids playing and hugging and kissing, Spanish kids, they're all running around. And they all know me as Uncle Shaq. I'll stop by and I'll play with them. Love that.
Law and owning a law firm is part of your plan, right?
Yes, that would be.
What sparked that interest?
Well, what sparked that interest is having a little bit of success in owning things. Don't want to be a lawyer. I don't know, but I would like to educate myself on what it takes to become a lawyer, take the bar, pass the bar, and then go back to my teamwork concept. Let me get a law firm. Let me get me a hell of a point guard. Boom. I'd like to get 5 or 6 lawyers. We put them together, get one guy under me. I manage all of them. We'd be very successful. That's one of the dreams I have. I like to sit down and just make up stuff that I want to do, and then at some point, go for it.
When you went to LSU, it was a tough run. People were hacking you. What was that like?
I wouldn't say it was tough. It was something that I relished, and I always looked at it as a sign of respect. Can't play you, can't guard you. Two of my teammates added to me, which makes 3-on-1. We still can't stop you, now we gotta beat you up. But, you know, growing up with a drill sergeant and being a football player first, see, a lot of people don't know, football was my love. So I always like contact, I always like bringing the pain, and I can receive the pain.
So that gave you the toughness that you needed.
Yeah, it definitely gave me the toughness I needed. And, you know, it actually helped me make a great business decision. because, again, my parents stressed education, so my whole plan was to stay 4 years, graduate, then go pro. But the first time I had to make a business decision, and, you know, taking all those business courses and reading all those books. My favorite book is The Dummy's Guide to Starting Your Own Business. A friend of mine named Gino Marino gave me that book. He said, hey, you're going to be rich. You need to read this book. So I'm sitting there, and I'm saying to myself, okay, if I get hurt this year from people tackling me in the air, Lloyd's of London will provide me $1 million. But Derek Coleman just signed for $30 million in 88. Economically, it's going to go up 15, 20%. So I could probably ask for 40, 50 million. Do I stay and get the 1 million if I get hurt? Or do I take a jump at this 40 million and then come back to school? So that's when I started at the age of 18 years old. I started thinking like a businessman. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a great decision.
As a kid, how did you relate to business? Did you see yourself as a business person in the
no.
future?
No, I was taught by scare tactics to become a businessman. And then, you know, because again, I didn't want to be one of those guys. And my family relied on me and everybody looked up to me. My grandmother used to tell me at an early age, you're going to be the one. The one for what, Grandma? You're going to be the one to just make life easier for everybody. Then I used to tell her, you know what, Grandma, when I get rich, I'm going to buy you a big old house in Newark, New Jersey. And that was one of the first things I did. So to not be one of those things, I said to myself, okay, all right, I'm making a lot of money. Now what do I do with it? Met a gentleman one time, he had a piece of paper, and said, this is $100, rip in half, $50. He said, smart people invest, whatever, real estate, with this 50. But then he had 50 left. But he said, the wealthy people take half of that 50. Now you got 25, and you put that away, and this, you have fun with it. Cars, jewelry, whatever you want. So I started doing that, and then when I started going to LA, I started seeing the things that Magic Johnson was doing in the community. I was like, okay, this is what people were starting to talk about. And then I started dabbing into it, you know. My first big purchase was 40 24-hour fitnesses. We did that, and then we did some real estate, redeveloping Newark, New Jersey. We dibbled and dabbled, got 4 or 5 restaurants in Las Vegas, did a couple of local car washes, got a couple of annuities.
What's so attractive about the franchising business?
It's just, you know, again, partnering up with another reliable, excellent brand, you know, being in business with people, and just, you know, owning stuff. Magic Johnson said to me at 18 years old, when I first met him, first time I met him, because he had an event and they clapped, Magic Johnson, newcomer, it's killing him. And Magic put me to the side and said, it's okay to be beloved by the fans, but at some point, you want to start owning things. And at 18 years old, I had no idea what he was talking about. But as I got older and moved to LA and saw how he moved around the community, I was like, okay, this is what I have to start doing.
You were criticized earlier in your career for diversifying, but now that seems to be your strength.
Criticism to me is a double-edged sword. You can take it and listen to it and fade away, or you can listen to it, find some truth in it, and better yourself. But I only take real criticism from my panel. Mother, father, Dale Brown, Mike Parrish, Jerome Crawford, Colin Smeaton, and Perry Rogers. That's my panel. They're the only ones can affect what I say and what I do, ever. So again, when I hear something, growing up with a drill sergeant, you can't hurt my feelings. No word can hurt my feelings. I've been in San Antonio, Baton Rouge, Germany, so there's no word you can say to hurt my feelings. So I'm programmed to go, all right, you're doing too many rap albums. You lost, you got swept three rounds in a row for the last 3 years. All right, fall back on the rep. Just fall back on that and let's see what you can do. Oh, championship, boom. Fall back on the rep again. Another championship, boom. We fall back on the rep and the movies and the commercials. All right, 3 in a row. So rather than go, oh, no, no, you listen sometimes to what the people are saying, especially if it's people you respect. The people you don't respect, you don't even listen to. But if it's people you respect, like if I heard because I like you and I respect you, if you said something, I wouldn't get mad at you. I would just rewind it a couple times, close my eyes and listen. All right, he has a point. He has a point. And that's how I do criticism. So because you have to take advantage of opportunities. Everybody don't get these opportunities. I never wanted to be a rapper. I never wanted to do movies. Thought about it, dreamed about it. So when I got drafted, Arsenio Hall kept calling me. Hey, man, we want you to come on the show. But it always goes back to the story I told you earlier. My mother said, make him remember your name. I don't want to come on your show, Arsenio, in a $5,000 suit and tell you corny stories and have you laugh. I'm going to do that because that's the format. But at the end, I got to make him remember my name. Got to do something different. Let me rap in my favorite rap group, Arsenio. Man, you can't rap. Let me show you. Did it. Boom, boom, boom. Record company's called the next day. I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that. We give you a $10 million, three-album deal. It's an opportunity. I said, okay, but I don't want to do album by myself. Let me do it with all my favorite artists, and you got to pay my artists whatever they want. All right, so now I'm trying to help them out, get them some money, too. Deal. So that was my first opportunity. So then I'm walking around in L.A., and I see a guy, Billy Freakin. He said, you know who I am? I said, no, sir, my name is Billy Freakin. I directed The Exorcist. I'm like, man, you're a legend in my house. Boom, we start talking. I got a project for you, sir. I'm going to do a movie. Man, I'm not an actor. Well, the good thing for you is you got to play a basketball player. Man, I don't know if I can do that. We'll pay you $3 million. What? Me? So this is about, it ain't about sitting at home going, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. A lot of times these things just come up.
It's widely known that your relationship with your mother is close. And the one thing that really struck me in prep for this interview was learning also about Philip, your father. And he wasn't just tough on you, he was also tough on the people who were working around you as well, it seemed like. Tell me about him. He was a drill sergeant?
He was a drill sergeant. He was a major disciplinarian. And he was a major high-level juvenile delinquent growing up. Newark, New Jersey, and he knew what the surroundings could bring. He knew that if I didn't follow the right path, I could end up a follower as opposed to a leader. So his mindset, I'm going to do whatever I have to take to make sure you go down the right path. And I thank him for it every day.
I saw an interview with your coach, Dale Brown, from LSU, and he said that Phil told him once, I think it's time for blacks to go another direction and develop intellectualism so they can be presidents of corporations instead of janitors, so they can be generals in the army instead of sergeants, and so they could be head coaches instead of assistants. If you're interested in my son's intellect, we might talk someday. What inspired him to be that way, and how did that impact you?
Well, because he knows that education could you know, bring out a lot. You know, education is something that can never be taken away from you. Have to retire from basketball, you have to retire from NFL, you have to retire from being a rapper, you have to retire from being an actor. But if you don't have education while you're doing all that, you'll be one of those stories that we all know about. It's a shame that, you know, 60% of professional athletes, after they're done, they have nothing. Well, he made that statement because at the time I was a terrible basketball player, 6'9", 13. Couldn't play.
Couldn't dunk.
It wasn't looking good for me. So the only way I could probably go to college is get an academic scholarship. So he was really, he didn't want no C's, no B's. If I didn't get an A, it'd be trouble. And you know, his thing is, hey, I don't care what you do in life, if you're an educated man, they can't take anything away from you.
Mm-hmm. And you were in Germany at the time as well, 4 years in Germany as a kid. How did that influence you?
I tell people all the time that I live the Karate Kid sort of life. The things I went through in my childhood prepared me to become the character known as Shaq. For example, born and raised in the projects of Newark, New Jersey. Had to move to Germany, learn how to deal with Europeans. Left there, had to move to San Antonio. You know, you deal with everybody, including Hispanics. Leave there, go to Baton Rouge, had to learn how to deal with Cajuns. So the point I'm trying to make is it enables me to deal with all people. I speak every language. Shalom, salam alaikum, what's up, big homie? How you doing, sir? I speak every language to everybody. And that's another great thing that my father did for me. Moving every 4 years, I got to learn different cultures, different religions, and just learn people.
When you think about legacy, a lot of self-made people, they worry a lot about whether their kids will have the work ethic that they had to be able to get to where they are. Is that something that you worry about? And legacy obviously is a big deal to you because...
I use the same tactics my father used, education first. Because I tell them all the time, look, we don't need another O'Neal basketball players. I like to have engineers, lawyers, hedge fund operators. Like, hey, it's six of y'all. Y'all can go any direction y'all want. Two of them want to go the basketball route. And I have two older ones. And I have two younger ones who are very, very intelligent. I don't really worry about them, but I don't stress what I did. I just stress education. And I'm also stressing business. I'm telling them now, think about what you want to do when you grow. I can get you there, but you're going to have to, you know, take it over the top. Like, I lived in Beverly Hills a long time. I see a lot of rich, spoiled brats riding around. They feel entitled. I see that. And based on what I saw Mickey Arison doing, a lot of other friends who make their kids start from the bottom, exactly what I have to do. And my kids are beautifully smart. Like, they're so smart, sometimes I say to them, I think we need to go on the Maury Povich show because there's no way I'm your father. You got all A's. Because I listen to my parents, I'm very successful. I wasn't one of those guys that made a 1900 on the SAT or 40 on the ACT. I wasn't one of those guys that when it comes to academics, you talk about. So, you know, for me to listen to two people who saw the vision that I didn't see, follow that vision to a T, have good people around me, I would say I'm a lucky individual.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. All right, buddy. Appreciate you.
Check out the latest installment of the multi-book series teaching kids about financial literacy. Wesley learns about insurance. Guest starring Broncos Hall of Fame running back Terrell Davis, authored by Prince Dykes. Teaching kids the real-life skill sets that matter as they grow older. The third book in the father-son financial literacy series gives a kid-friendly introduction into the world of insurance. Award-winning and recently stamped by Warren Buffett. Available hardcover, paperback, ebook, and audio online at Amazon, iTunes, Audible, Barnes & Noble, Walmart.com, Tattered Books, and more. Hardcovers are only available at Lulu.com, presented by Alpha One Tax and Wealth and Belco Credit Union.